We're in the book of Genesis. We've got such a long, long way to go. We need to get into the book and everything, but I'm just amazed if you stop and think about it. I mentioned it in a sermon recently, probably a couple of weeks ago. We only know about 30 days of the life of Jesus. Question is, why those 30s? That's a real, real interesting question to ask. Why not? How many days in 33 years, you know? Why not the 10,000 other days? I made up that number. I don't know if that's right or not. But the 10,000 other days, why of the 10,000 days he lived on this earth, why these 30 days? And the same thing about the book of Genesis. You know, it's 1,656 years from the creation to the flood. What do you know happened? I mean, you tell me what happened in 1,656 years. We know almost nothing. And we've got a long, extended discussion in chapter 4 about Cain and Abel's sacrifice. You think that was not the only disobedience there ever was? We've got three verses to talk about Enoch walking with God. And then all of a sudden you get to the flood, and here's three whole chapters devoted to the flood. As we'll analyze the book and step back from it, there are 12 chapters devoted to Abraham, 12 or 13 chapters devoted to Abraham. Now, that one I can understand because of his place in the New Testament, but are you aware that there are an equal number of chapters in the book of Genesis devoted to Joseph? Joseph is not even in the lineage of Christ. Now, he's Jew, so I'm not saying he's not Jewish, but here's Joseph, and he's a sidelight. Here's Jacob's 12 sons, and here's the tribe of Levi, and here's the tribe of Judah, where all the kings come from, and that's the tribe through which Jesus came. And all over here, way out on, is an appendage of Joseph. And there are as many chapters devoted to Joseph, and a great many more details, as many chapters devoted to Joseph as there are to Abraham. Why that? And I'm not sure I know all of it. Tim, go ahead. What'd you say? And that's a great point. And Tim says he's a type of Christ, rejected and all everything that's involved in it. And he's a link in the story. There's no question at all that he's a part of the story of the Bible. But, the Babylonian captivity, how many chapters are devoted to the Babylonian captivity? Other than Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and then after Babylon falls, you've got Daniel and the lions in over in Persia. What do you know happened during the years of the Babylonian? You know very, very little. Once the actual captivity starts, we know nothing about it. And so the book of Genesis could have said there was a famine in the land, and Jacob and his children moved down to the land of Egypt. And it came to pass that the Egyptians enslaved them, and after 400 years, the Lord heard their cryings and brought them out of the land of Egypt. You could abbreviate the story of Joseph in four verses. And I just stand amazed. I don't understand all the reasons for it. There are all kinds of reasons. But let me tell you, God saw the importance of this. And that's something that is really, really important in relationship to this. So last study, we got to Noah out of the ark, did we not? Just about got him out of the ark. And then as a result of that, God makes a covenant. The rainbow was a sign to whom? All right. Look at where's the account? Yes. Look in chapter 9, verse 11. Thus I will establish my covenant with you. Never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood. Never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth. I will set my rainbow in the clouds, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. It shall be a sign when I bring a cloud over the earth that the rainbow shall be seen in the cloud. I will remember my covenant, and what? Look at this, between me, you, and who else? You ever notice that? We think of the sign of the covenant. We think of the rainbow being a sign of a promise that God has made to us. But the Lord says it is a sign to every living creature of all flesh. And I point that out, not that I have any comments to make, but other than to say, isn't that interesting? We read the Bible too fast, folks. We have got to slow down. If you're doing an in-depth study, we've got to slow down and read it, because you'll not see that unless you're reading it really, really carefully. Now, the rainbow is a sign of the covenant that God will never again do what he had done before. That in and of itself shows that the flood was a universal flood. There are some people whose God is not big enough who want to make this to be a localized flood, but such is not the case. If this is a true record that would cause us to believe in the flood, that it was a reality, then we ought to be able to say, well, and the rest of it is true too. Wasn't just a localized flood over there. The Tigris and the Euphrates River sort of swelled up and everything, and that's what happened. No, it was a flood that covered all of the earth. And that's what the Bible said. Now, you and I don't have any problem with that. But you and I need to understand that there are people who call themselves Christians who are modernists, who try to explain away even the miracles of every miracle of the Bible and find a natural explanation for the miracles of the Bible. The story of Jesus feeding the multitudes. How modernist Christians explain the feeding the 5,000? Why, Jesus just took... He looked, there was that little boy, and he had his sandwiches and everything, and everybody was ashamed to eat because they didn't want to eat in front of everybody else. So whenever Jesus opened up that meal that was for that little boy, then everybody else went in their knapsacks and found and brought out their food. And that's how you take 5 loaves and 2 fishes and feed 5,000 men, not counting the women and the children. Now, I want you to understand, that's not folks who are avowed atheists and agnostics. That's folks that are in denominational seminaries. It's the kind of thing that is used to explain the turning of the Red Sea, turning the water into blood. While there was an earthquake up in the upper bounds of the Nile River, and there was some red mud up there. And that red mud came down, and it just sort of looked like blood, and Moses and sort of took credit of it. Natural explanation of all of those things. I've got a photo in one of the books in my library of the first photo of manna. And out of the wilderness, God gave them manna. And it's a photo of a little bush, a shrub that's out there in Mount Sinai or around that area. And there's oozing of wax that comes out. You know, some fruit trees do that. You remember peach trees sometimes will ooze the wax out, shake or not. Is that just only the peach tree we had in our backyard? And all that was that it was just some of the sap that came out, and somebody happened to be there at the right day when the sap came out. And I should have said some sap happened to be there the right day. And so when the sap came out, he said, that's got to be the manna. Now, how are you going to feed, you know, that many people? And so they argue then about there being, not 6 million people, but 6,000 people. And it's just, when you get over into modernism, but let me tell you, whenever these young men in the mainstream churches of America, when they're devout and they head off to become a pastor or a vicar or some reverend in the denominational world, this is the kind of foolishness they're taught. And they arrive there with some semblance of faith, and it doesn't take any time at all to explain away the miracles that are in the Bible. I just stay amazed. And so, but the rainbow is a sign. Let's get back to where we're headed. And we ought to stop every time we see a rainbow. I don't mean an I-95 stop. But we need, We need to look at that rainbow. God put it there as a reminder of what happened on this earth and as a reminder of the promise that God made to all mankind. I think it's critical for us to do that. And for sure, our nieces or nephews or grandchildren or our own children, we ought to say, do you know where the rainbow came from? And tell them this Bible story. There's just, God has placed in the Scriptures things that will allow us to be reminded of Him again and again. You know, the heavens declare His glory, and the firmament shows His handiwork. And there's the evidence of God all around every place, and it's there. And we just need to take time in relationship to it. Is anybody have any comments they want to make about the flood or anything? Any other questions or anything? I'm ready to keep moving, but we're certainly entertain any questions that you have. Yes, Dave. Let's let Les go first.
A lot of people say that it was a known world that the flood.
Yes. The known world, yes, because how on earth could Moses know how big the world was? You know? Well, Moses didn't write that. Holy men of God spake as they were moved by the Spirit of God. And then, there was a man who lived on this earth who affirmed there was a flood, and that's Jesus. I think it's interesting sometimes to see the stories that Jesus affirms from the Old Testament. He doesn't pick every one of the stories of the Old Testament, but think of all the stories of the Old Testament that Jesus makes mention of. And He mentions Noah more than once. Dave, you had a comment. Yes. And I don't know if you heard what Dave said, but we try to make God into a man. You know, if I were going to do it and I were God, this is what I'd do. And that's sort of it. We are made in the image of God. Men have made God in the image of a man. You know, that book was written some years ago, How Big Is Your God? How big is your God? Is it Scott?
The cup with water.
Yes.
And then the sign of the rainbow was like you talked about.
That, right. Anybody know that that song? It's not in any of our books, but there's a flood coming, but it's not a flood of water, flood of rain. Anybody know that song? Or next time it'll not rain, but fire. Next time it's fire, and it's got a redundancy of saying it's coming again. It's coming again. You think it's talking about the flood because the verse part of it talks about the flood, the coming of the flood, and the chorus says, but it won't be water. It'll be fire. Yes, that's right. That's right. Okay, let's get to chapter 10. And in chapter 10, I had a lot of fun this week. It didn't take all that long, but I had a lot of fun. And do you want to have some fun right now? You want us to do with Noah what we did with Adam? How many generations would Noah have known? We talked last week about, or in that when we studied Adam, I said Abraham, I meant to say Adam. When we talked about Adam, how close does Adam get to Noah? And so we did that in class. And Tim, I'm going to count on you to be the mathematician here and do it right, because I don't have my notes here with me. Noah comes out of the ark in chapter 11. We get a time marker for Noah. How old was Noah when the flood began? He was 600 years old when the flood began. You got it? So he goes in the ark. He's in the ark for a little over a year. And so we have a marker in chapter 11, verse 10. This is the genealogy of Shem. Now, who's Shem? He's Noah's son. Do you remember Noah's three sons? It was Shem, Ham and eggs. And Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And so this is the genealogy. And so we're going to start at Shem, and we're going to end up with Abraham in verse 26. Terah lived 70 years and begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Now, how old was Noah when he died? The Bible tells us all the days of Noah, and that's probably got to be back in chapter 5. I'm not sure exactly where it is. That all the days of Noah were 950 years. It's chapter 10, verse 29. All the days of Noah were, what?
929.
All the days of Noah were 950 years. So here's what we want to look. Noah lives 350 years after the flood. He lived 2/3 of his life before the flood and 1/3 of his life after the flood. So he saw his grandchildren and his great-grandchildren and his great-grandchildren, and we want to just see if we can discover where does Abraham's faith come from? Is there any possibility at all that Abraham could have known Noah? That Abraham could have known Noah. Is there any possibility? All right, let's get our marker. Here's Shem. This is the genealogy of Shem. Shem was how old when he begat his son? He was 100. And the son's name was Arphaxad, 2 years after the flood. This is rather interesting, by the way. How old was Shem when the flood came? If he was 100, 2 years after the flood, that's not a big math. Is Judd in here? No, Judd must be in the other class. He's got the doctor's degree of photography or whatever, but he might be able to subtract and everything. If you're 100 years old, 2 years after the flood, how are you? How old are you when you go into the ark?
97.
You're probably 98 or something like that, right?
97.
Now you stop and think about it. Here's the amazing thing. How long did it take Noah to build the ark? 120 years. So when this baby is born, when Shem is born, the ark's already 30 years into the making. And so he grows up, and all he knows is his daddy out there building an ark. If it takes 120 years to build the ark, I mean, God said, 120 years from now, I'm going to send the flood. We assume from that Noah started building the ark. Here's this boy, and he grows up, and he knows nothing but ark building. I just find that amazing. We're reading it too fast. Got to slow down and think some of this through. I don't know if that's any advantage to know that at all. It's just insight. All right, how old is Noah whenever Arphaxad is born? 2 years after the flood, how old is Noah? Let's make it 602 because we'd be 600 years after the start of the flood. It's 603 after the end of the flood. But the notes I made were at the start of the flood. So all right, we got 2 years, Tim. We're starting with the number 2, okay? We're trying to get to 350. You with me? You got your pencil? Anybody else? We got some accountants in here. Where are these accountants in here? All right. So start with 2. Noah's of the 350 years, he spent 2 of those years, and Arphaxad is born. How old is Arphaxad whenever he gives birth to Selah? That's in chapter 11, about what verse? Verse 12. He's 35. Does that look any different from how old they were before the flood? Oh, yeah, vastly different. You know, Methuselah was 187 years of age whenever he gave birth to his child, I think. And the father of Noah was a similar age. All right, we've got, so we got 37, Tim. We're on the right page. Account us, we're on the right page. Noah, we're trying to get 350. And so we're trying, that's the number we're looking for. Or you can get, you can do 900 and get them to 950. All right. Selah is how old when he gives birth? This is Noah's great-grandson. Selah lived how long? 30 years. So add 30 to that number. Now, he's got 350 years to live, and so we got 37, we got whatever that is, 35, and we've got 30. And then Eber, look down at verse 16, how old's he? He's what? He's 34. Add 34 to it. He gives a son by the name of Peleg, and Peleg lives how old? Verse 18, chapter 11, verse 18. All right, 30 years. He begat Reu, and verse 20, Reu lives how many? 20, oh wait, pardon me, he lives 32 years, and Serug begat Nahor, and Serug's how old, verse 22, when he begats his son? He's 30, less than verse 22. Nahor begets a son named Terah. How old is Nahor? He's 29. How many of the 350 years have we used up now? Is Noah still alive? Terah is the father. Terah is the father of Abraham. And he's still alive. Noah's still alive. How many years? I didn't hear. 222. Everybody agree with that? I don't think I've skipped anyone. After he begot Terah, Nahor lived 119, and Terah lived 70 years. That's, what's that, 292, is that what you said?
Nope.
All right, 292. We got to get to 350. This amazing? Abraham could have known Noah for 58 years of his life. Is that astounding? I love what Brother Camp used to say. God put these genealogies in there for some reason. And yet, I'm just amazed. We talk about the faith of Abraham. Well, Abraham, tell me about your great, 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 great grandfather. And he said, yeah, I was in the ark. And I talked to God. And there was this flood. Your grandchildren ever say, Grandma, tell me that story about when you were a little boy. And that's what our children, Abraham talking to Noah. I mean, you'd put the greats in there, but tell me what it was like to be in the ark, here and then back there, okay?
He probably also told him about all the sin there was.
Yes, yes. And Joyce, just observe about all the sin and the wickedness and the why of the flood. Tim? Yes. Right. And you're absolutely right about that. And we got a part of that over when we get to chapter 11, right? And so about the Tower of Babel, but they were scattered, and it's possible he didn't know it. And so in my notes, Abraham knew Noah for 58 years. And I backed away from that and said, I don't know that. Abraham was contemporary with Noah for 58 years.
Didn't have FaceTime back then. So.
Yeah. And they didn't have Facebook back then, so they probably couldn't keep up with. But isn't that a mark? Does that amaze you? Am I the only one that is amazed? I used to wonder where Abraham's faith came from. The book of Joshua says Terah, Abraham's father, was an idolater. And so here's Abraham. His dad worships idols. And Abraham has unbelievable faith in God. And until I did the math here this week, I mean, that's just you can do Shem if you want to. You can see how many of the other greats he knew. Yes.
Life was short after the flood, it makes you wonder how old they could have been if there was no flood.
Yes. Dave just made a real observation about the lives are shortened now. They're living 900 years before the flood, and now we're down, when you get to Abraham, 175 years, and some of these other guys, not even that much. And so life is shortened, and that is indicative of something, and a possible difference might be the vast difference in the way the earth and the topography of the earth and the weather of the earth and all that's involved in the earth was changed as a result of the flood. Don't know that for a fact, just a possibility that the vastness of that upheaval in the earth created a world in which bodies could not live forever and ever, well, not forever, but for 1,000 years like they did before the flood. Something happened in relationship. Yes, yours.
Isn't there a scripture that where God says that man's life is only going to be 120 years?
No. I mean, at one time I would have answered that yes. Joyce says, what's the scripture that says man's life will only be 120 years? The Lord says that His Spirit would not always strive with man. His days will be 120 years. But they continue to live after that. And when I was a biblical genius, about 7 or 8 years of age, I figured it out because I knew Moses lived. You know how long Moses lived? 120 years. You put the two together, 1,000 years before the flood, and when they came out of the ark, nobody lived past 120. Well, let's see. Let's see how long Shem lived. Well, let's see. Shem begat Arphaxad, and after he begat Arphaxad, Shem lived 500 years. And so, you've got Shem, you can figure out Shem. Shem, Abraham could have known Shem. You can lay out an Excel sheet if you want to, and that's real interesting. Chapter 11, the Tower of Babel. Interesting in so many respects. The whole earth had one language and one speech. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, they found a plain in the lands of Shinar, and they dwelt there. We know where Shinar is. It's over in Mesopotamia. It's over in it's in Iraq, to give us some identification where that plain is to be found. And they said to one another, "Come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly." They had brick for stone, and they had asphalt for mortar. And they said, "Let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves." And hear this, "lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth." But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, "The people are one, and they all have one language. And this is what they began to do. Nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them." That's remarkable, isn't it? What they had proposed to do, because they were one speech and one mind, the Lord said they're going to be able to do it. Yes, friend?
Do you think they kind of tried to compete with God?
Well, when I was a child learning this story, and I've mentioned this in here before, I learned this story the same time I learned Jack and the Beanstalk. I really believe that the sister that taught me in that building we had at West Huntsville, where we had no classroom, when it's time for Sunday school, "All right, you children, go up there in that corner, and we'll have a class over here, and a class over here, and a class over here," a little rectangular-shaped building. And it's amazing. The Bible that you would learn, none of this visual aids, none of all of this. There was a card. Any of you remember the cards you used to have when you were children? And it was one little card. It was about this big, maybe a little over 3 inches by 2.5 inches. And I was talking to my cousin Ansel this week. He's writing his autobiography, by the way. And he said, "Dan," said, "you may not remember, but we had so little money at West Huntsville, instead of buying a card for everybody, we bought one for the teacher." And that's all they had. And that's not the way I remember it. So I'm Ansel's 3.5 years older than I am, so I think I got my own card when I came along a little bit later. But she'd take us up in that corner. And all she had, she'd open up her Bible and tell me a Bible story. I learn more Bible in that setting than is generally learned by children growing up in the church these days. All you had to tell a Bible story. Now, there was always a memory verse on that card, and we had to memorize the verse. That's why I think by the time I came along, they gave everybody in the class the card. And so Saturday night, man, you got your shoes ready, got your clothes out, ready for Sunday morning, even took your weekly bath. You really wanted to smell good on Sunday. But Mom and Dad said, you got your memory verse. You got your memory verse. And we had to have it. And it's amazing what we learned about the Bible. Well, I learned this story about the same time I learned Jack and the Beanstalk. Now, when you got Jack and the Beanstalk in the church building, but I was of the opinion that they were going to build a tower all the way up to where God is. And if you'd heard me preach at 4, 5, 6 years of age, I would have said, and it was either Jack or these guys over there in Bible that almost built it, and they got the goose that laid the golden eggs, and I couldn't. I had trouble keeping it straight, okay? What did they say? Well, let us build a tower whose top is where? You see that word where the top of the is found? You see the S on that word heavens? The New King James has an S on it. I didn't check other translations. If you don't see that, you might ought to circle that so the next time you look at it. They built a tower to heaven. That's the way we said it. And, Sister Hastings, if she was the one who was teaching at that time, and she said they were going to build a tower all the way up to heaven, I'm confident that is the way I remember her telling the story. But there's an S on that because, you see, the Jews had three heavens. And so in the New Testament, we read about Paul knew going up into the third heavens. There's a heaven, Genesis chapter 1, the heavens where the birds fly. There's the heavens where the cloud, where the firmament is, and then there's the heaven of heavens. There's an interesting statement in the book of Deuteronomy. You might want in your Bible, by the word heaven, to put Deuteronomy chapter 1, where Moses talks about when they came to go into the land of promise. And when they arrived at the land of promise, I thought it was verse 39. That's not the one I'm looking for. But don't put Deuteronomy 1 there yet. Put Numbers 13. I don't know. We'll find it. This is critical. Of critical importance, I think. When the spies came back, must be in the book of Numbers, where the spies are sent out, and the spies came back and says, the people, they're fortified. We saw the descendants that were there. What? 9-1? 128. Okay, let's look at 128 first, if that's okay. Look at Deuteronomy 128. Yes, here it is. Deuteronomy 128. When the spies come back after spying out the land, says there are giants in the land that's there. Where can we go up? Our brethren have discouraged our hearts, saying, the people are greater and taller than we are. The cities are great and fortified up to heaven. What does that mean? Where God is? No. We get to the walls of those cities and they go up to the heavens. And so it is not Jack and the Beanstalk. It is not that God was worried they'd be able to build a tower all the way up to heaven. Two or three things wrong with that. There's not enough material on this earth. The more of the earth you take to build a tower to reach up to the heavens, the less earth you have. You stop and think about it. It is physically impossible to do that. But it would be possible to build a tower, and the tower was not so we could get up there and find the goose that laid the golden eggs, to confuse my two stories again. We want to build this city lest we be scattered. Isn't that amazing? The Lord had told them when they came out of the ark to go out and to replenish the earth. And they said, we don't want to do that. The interesting thing is, the Lord says, because they are of one mind, or one speech and one language, that what they put their heart to do, they will be able to accomplish. Does anybody remember what John Kennedy promised? It had to be President Kennedy. It had to be, what, 60 or 61? That in this generation, we're going to do what?
Go to the moon.
Do you know what? You know the year we had our first satellite circling the earth? Do you know what that satellite looked like? A little round ball about this big. And because the Russians had put up their satellites, we had to get ours up. And I grew up in Huntsville where they built those rockets. So this is what I grew up living and breathing. And they shot up a little thing, went around the earth, said, beep, beep, beep. It's all it said was, here I am. I mean, we are not, you know, I don't even know if, what was the name of that monkey? The name of that monkey they orbited the earth was named Abel or something. Or actually, they sent him downrange first just to see if a monkey could survive. And 2 years after we put up a little basketball circling the earth saying, it's called Vanguard, I believe is the name of it, circling the earth saying, here I am. The President of the United States says in this generation, we're going to cause man to walk on the moon. Some of you are not old enough to remember what a mind-bursting statement that is. In this generation, we're going to cause man to walk on the moon. And America became one, and it became the heart of America. You remember the astronauts? Isn't it amazing? You know the name of the first man that walked on the moon. I hope you do. You remember how many astronauts there were originally? There were seven of them. You remember the names of them? You all grew up in Huntsville. I mean, this is what life is all about. Do you remember the astronaut that was a member of the church? That when they first shot him downrange, he didn't orbit the earth, just shot him downrange. And when the capsule landed downrange, instead of waiting for the divers to take the door off, he took the door off himself. You know, you remember it happened though, and the capsule sank. He barely got out of it. Grissom. See, what a great mind you have. Only people with unbelievably great minds would remember that, right, Les?
Sunday morning.
Okay, it's a good day. All right.
Vanguard was a rocket that took them. It wasn't a satellite. Vanguard was a rocket from the Army.
Actually, that first rocket was from the Navy, and you and I can argue about this later, okay? It was the Jupiter that first put it up. Go ahead.
Well, Gus Grissom wasn't a member of the church,
though. He was, wasn't he? No? Someone was.
Scott Carpenter.
Okay, I got to go back and do my homework anyway. But you remember how he died? He died in the Apollo. Grissom died in the Apollo when it caught on fire, when it was on the earth. On the. That's sort of off topic, isn't it? Away from Genesis? No. They're of one heart and one mind. There's power, unbelievable power in unity. You take Take one stick and you can snap it in a heartbeat. But you take lots of sticks and you can't break it. The men who want to show how strong they are tear a piece of paper. What piece of paper do they tear? A phone book. You put all of those pieces of paper one on top of the other and there's unbelievable strength. And you look at the unity that's characterized this church and it's amazing. John, you had a comment. Yes, and that shows how wicked the world is, all right? One quick comment. Yes, Richard.
I heard
It was Gus Grissom. Okay, all right. I was ready to take you on that. Okay, all right, folks. Well, we got to stop.